Now, as Kelly said there, she reckons self-control or willpower, if you like, is a pretty key tool for people to make the most of that upside of stress that she sees. But not all of us have the greatest reserves of that to draw on, and speaking personally here. But Zach Williamson is a psychologist at the University of Wyoming whose most recent research revealed something interesting about self-control. Sometimes, he says, the best thing is not even to try to exercise it at all. A fascinating area, Zach, that you study, self-control, willpower, and some interesting conclusions that you've drawn. But I guess, look, this is deeply personal to all of us, isn't it? Is it something you happen to struggle with? Does that perhaps explain your own interest in the topic?
Yeah, I mean, I think even though we're told that we're supposed to pick a subject to study that we can be objective and be kind of non-biased in our research, I think we all do me-search in ways. And so for me, I've always been interested in self-control. You know, I was a baseball player in high school, and so I was always really serious about training. And there were definitely moments where I found that it was maybe easier to skip a workout when maybe I should have been exercising or lifting weights or something like that. And then, of course, like a lot of people, when I started my undergraduate years, when I was working towards a bachelor's degree, you know, I gained quite a bit of weight. This is definitely relevant to me in my personal life. And it's actually really useful because I've been able to take a lot of what I've learned through my research and apply it in my own life to probably get myself in a little bit better shape and just to do a little bit better job of managing conflicts in my own life. So yeah, it's definitely personal for me, personally relevant.
What is, though, a good kind of working definition of self-control, of willpower?
So I think of self-control as the ability to stick with your long-term goals, even when you're tempted to do something that might be enjoyable, like right now. Like if you're on a diet, it would be the ability to choose a salad when someone's offering you a piece of chocolate cake. So that's usually how I like to think about it. Because I work with a lot of college students, I explain it to the average student as it's the ability to study on a Friday night when your friends are inviting you out. That's the way I think of it.
Is that more or less the same thing as delayed gratification, a concept some of us get told about by our parents or
our
teachers?
Early research on self-control really started with Walter Mischel's research on delay of gratification, so the famous marshmallow test.
Yeah, one a lot of children have been subjected to down the years, I think.
Yeah, as far as I know, and I don't think this is what Walter Mischel had in mind, but I think a lot of parents try the marshmallow test because they think it's diagnostic of something, when of course it's probably not, but it is an interesting experiment. And the videos are great if you watch them on YouTube or something. You know, a lot of people struggle with self-control, and it's not because of any type of character flaw. I mean, I think if you're going to understand human behavior, you really have to think about our evolutionary history. If you think back to our not-so-distant past, the average life expectancy for a human being was like 35 years. And so throughout most of our evolutionary history, we weren't exactly worried about saving for retirement. And so we have all kinds of motivational forces that might push us towards wanting to do things that are going to be immediately enjoyable at the cost of things that might be beneficial in the long run. It is the ability to recognize that sticking with our long-term goals will produce this beneficial long-term outcome. But it's a difficult thing to do because I don't think that that's naturally how we think.
But while we go through the agonies of making a decision and trying to work out, look, is this really in our best interests? Do I need to control myself here and not do the thing I want to do? You've kind of reached the conclusion that in a lot of cases, the best thing to do with your willpower, your self-control, is actually not to exercise it. Can you explain that for us?
What I would say is it's not necessarily a matter of not exercising self-control. It's just a matter of making it easier. And so what I encourage people to do is try to think ahead of time and try to anticipate possible conflicts that might arise when they're pursuing their goals. And so, you know, if you're on a diet, you can anticipate when you might be tempted to order a pizza or something like that. And if you can think ahead, you can plan different self-control strategies out ahead of time. And so kind of an old saying is if you're on a diet, you've pretty much lost the battle if you, you know, buy a bunch of cookies while you're at the grocery store. So what you need to do is try to be proactive and make self-control easier. So it's not a matter of not working at all. It's just a matter of working smarter and not necessarily harder.
If I plan my day well and I do my exercise, I meet all my sort of personal goals, does that mean I won't find myself needing to exercise the self-control if I just organize myself better?
Exactly. Yeah. And so there's a personality measure that's called trait self-control. And so that's thought to measure this stable ability that individuals have to, you know, have good self-control. And what you see with people who are high in trait self-control is it's not that they're self-disciplined in the sense that you can put a piece of chocolate cake in front of them and they just turn it down without any difficulty or anything like that. What you see is that these people tend to have these well-established routines. And so like what you were describing there, you know, instead of needing to use self-control to prevent themselves from doing something that's going to be catastrophic, they just plan their day out ahead of time so they don't even put themselves in that situation to begin with.
Yeah, I don't think I have great trait self-control as you described it there. But there is another model, isn't there, about a decade ago or so, a little more. Roy Baumeister had put forward an influential model, the so-called strength model. If I understand rightly, this is effectively comparing your self-control, turning it into a kind of physical asset like a muscle and the ability to exert it. Is that right?
Yeah. Roy Baumeister, he's very good at explaining difficult concepts in a way that's very intuitive. And so in this case, he chose to use this muscle metaphor where he compared self-control to a muscle. And yeah, the basic idea is if you're using self-control, you can think of it as if you're using a muscle. And of course, if you overwork a muscle, you're eventually going to exhaust that muscle. And so you won't be able to exert self-control anymore. Another way to think about it, there's a muscle metaphor, but then there's also this idea that self-control depends on a limited resource. So you can think of it like a car or a vehicle running on gasoline. Once you run out of gas, your car is not going to run. And so that's the basic idea behind the strength model, that self-control is limited, and if we overuse it, we're going to run out.
But what's the alternative, though, if you decide you've got to ration it? I mean, we all get told by our parents back in the day, you know, if at first you don't succeed, try again. But if you're finding you've run out of the self-control, is that just futile?
Well, it gets pretty complicated. There's a pretty lively debate right now in psychology about that model. Some studies suggest that it's not actually that self-control depends on a limited resource. It could be the case that what's actually going on is that when we're doing something that's really difficult, we have these psychological mechanisms that more or less tell us we are working too hard. And if we continue exerting a bunch of effort towards a goal that might be futile, you know, that's going to be really costly. There's some type of opportunity cost there. And so one idea is that what's actually happening, what we think is what's called ego depletion, is actually just a change in our motivation, to where now, instead of wanting to do something that's going to produce some long-term reward, we're biased towards doing something that's going to be enjoyable right now. You can think of it this way. It's not so much that we try to resist temptation at that point. It's a matter of, well, actually, we're just not trying anymore. We just sort of give up. But I will say, I mean, that's a controversial subject right now, and the research on that goes back and forth.
Yeah, because it would be too easy, I imagine, if you do adopt that and think, oh, I've got a finite resource of my self-control. I feel I'm run out of it. I'm not even going to try. So, you know, if at first you don't succeed, call in an airstrike, as the old joke goes.
Yeah, it's really, I would say that area of research is kind of what got me interested in what I'm doing now. Because so some of the early studies on what's called ego depletion, and so that's where this whole idea of a limited resource comes from, implicated glucose as the resource that our, you know, self-control depends on. And so what these studies would have people do, they would do some type of laboratory task where they would have to use self-control. Some people would be allowed to drink lemonade, so it had glucose in it, and then perform another task that required self-control, whereas other people would be given a placebo, So some sort of artificially sweetened drink that didn't have glucose. And so what those early studies seemed to show was that people who were given the glucose sweetened drink had better self-control. But it gets kind of complicated because studies that have followed that up seem to show that if you just let people swish around a glucose sweetened beverage in their mouth without actually ingesting it, they'll have better self-control. And so the idea there is that the resource can't be glucose because, you know, you're not going to absorb enough glucose by simply swishing it around in your mouth. I like the strength model because it does provide, I think, a useful analogy to help people understand self-control. But I think the muscle analogy might be a little bit misleading because it seems to imply that if you just work harder, maybe you strengthen your self-control muscle, you can prevent self-control failures. And I don't know if that's necessarily the idea that you want to be teaching people.
So, Zach, in the end, does your research and your reading lead you to the conclusion that actually the best way to do this is to try and remove those temptations, to try and put yourself out of harm's way? Is that the best we can do?
Yeah. And actually, my favorite idea, this is actually something that comes from Roy Baumeister, but are you familiar with, well, the story of Odysseus and the Sirens?
Almost well enough in my read in my classical literature to know the very basics of that, but you tell me why it's significant in terms of self-control.
Okay, so Odysseus, oh boy, maybe I'm a little rusty here. He's returning from, I think it's the Trojan War. He's going back to Ithaca. He has to sail by this island where there are sirens that lure sailors with their singing voices. And so the goddess Circe warns Odysseus about the sirens, and so she instructs him, in this case, to bind himself to the mast of his ship and then have his crew stuff beeswax in their ears. So they're basically making it impossible for them to steer their ship into the island. So that's kind of a good example there of some proactive strategy you can use to resist temptation. The way Roy Baumeister actually describes it is, if you're looking at people who have good self-control, it looks like they just take a different route home. So instead of sailing by the island to begin with, they just go in a different direction. And so if you can navigate around temptation, that might be the best strategy in the long run.
Yeah, and this is where I guess a lot of people's inclination is to try and distract themselves. If you recognize there's a problem, you try and take yourself away, take yourself a few minutes away, do another activity, something like that. But if you don't have the muscle, if we can go back to the other analogy, you know you have insufficient reserves of self-control to act in your own best interest, or you don't trust yourself to do it. Is that a smart thing to do, a diversion, or are you then just in the back of your mind knowing that you're just delaying taking the bad outcome in the end?
Distraction is kind of a tricky strategy because what you don't want to do is what's called thought suppression. If I tell you to imagine there's a white bear in the corner of the room that you're sitting in right now, and then I tell you don't think about the white bear, right? If you try to suppress that thought, you're going to be more likely to think about the white bear. And so, yeah, you need to replace that thought with some other thought, but even that probably depends on self-control, at least to some degree. And so in some ways, you're always going to need some amount of willpower to resist temptation. But if you use something like distraction, you can at least make it easier for yourself, to where instead of actively forcing yourself not to think about the white bear, maybe you use a little bit of willpower to force yourself to look at a book or something like that. But the idea is you're making that struggle a little bit easier. The real take-home point is just to make things as easy for yourself as possible. If that means you distract yourself, then maybe that's what you should do. There's another strategy that's called reappraisal. And so maybe you need to change the way you're thinking about your situation, and maybe that'll make self-control a little bit easier. And so if you're trying not to eat cookies when you're on a diet, instead of you thinking about how good those cookies are going to taste, you could tell yourself that those cookies look kind of stale and old and probably won't taste very good.
You'd have to be pretty good at deceiving yourself perhaps to do that, though. But we've all been through massive disruptions with routine and the COVID restrictions, lockdowns, etc. So look, if this was to come around again, should we all sit down and think, What are we good at? What can we resist? What can't we do? And how do I protect myself from basically damaging my, you know, what's important to me long term and even medium term in order to get through another episode like that?
It's interesting. You bring up the COVID pandemic because I read.
Just seems to come up in every conversation we have these days. That's the only
Well,
thing.
Yeah. And I read a popular science paper, and I forget the name of the article, but what they were basically saying is that this COVID pandemic is the marshmallow test we never signed up for. And so they were making the case that, you know, asking people to upend their life, we're inherently social creatures. Like, we desire social contact. People want to be able to go to work. So, yeah, I mean, this whole thing has required a ton of self-control, really.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Zach. It's been great talking to you. You've given us plenty to think about that's highly relevant in these weird times we're all living in. So thanks so much for joining us on Sunday morning.
Yeah, thanks.
It's Zach Williamson, psychologist at the University of Wyoming in the US and a researcher in that vexed area of self-control.